We've been advised to open the special meeting, and then we're going to immediately go into recess, probably for 25 minutes. So we will, why don't you and I switch chairs, Eric? And we will open the special meeting, and then we will go into recess.
Here, you'll need this.
Yes. Okay, the meeting of, the special meeting of the Board of Trustees, Thursday, May 9th, 2019, has come to order. Agenda item one, we'll do a call to order and the roll call. Ms. Dewis, can you please call the roll?
Trustee Rita Athus. Trustee John Butler.
Here.
Trustee Montel Gales. Trustee Nathan Hayes.
Here.
Trustee Veronica Herrero.
Here.
Trustee Bob Pritchard.
Present.
Vice Chair Eric Wasowitz.
Here.
Board Chair Dennis Barsima.
Here. Agenda item two, Mr. Brady, can you please confirm that appropriate notice of this meeting has been provided and that we have a quorum present?
Mr. Chair, we have reached quorum and appropriate notices have been provided by the university.
Great, Thank you. At this point, we will go into recess. It is approximately 6 minutes before 2. We will come back at 2:20. So we'll take a 25-minute recess for lunch and then be back at 2:20. Okay? Thank you. We are going to bring the special meeting of the Board of Trustees on Thursday, May 9th, 2019, back out of recess. And before we go on, let's do a roll call just to confirm that all board members are back in the room. So, Ms. Dewis, would you please take a roll call?
Trustee Rita Athus. Trustee John Butler.
Here.
Trustee Montel Gales.
Here.
Trustee Nathan Hayes.
Here.
Trustee Veronica Herrero.
Here.
Trustee Bob Pritchard.
Here.
Vice Chair Eric Wasowitz.
Here.
Board Chair Dennis Barsima.
Here. Okay, we left off on agenda item three, which is the meeting agenda approval. So may I have a motion to approve the agenda as proposed? Is there a second? Is there any discussion? Seeing none or hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion is approved. Agenda item four, review of the minutes from the meeting of March 7th, 2019. May I have a motion to approve the minutes from March 7th, 2019?
So moved.
Is there a second? Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is approved. Agenda item five, chairs, comments, and announcements. I'd like to welcome the members once again of our University Advisory Committee who are present here today. I see three of them, Kathy, Holly, and Therese. Thank you for joining us and for staying with us today. Do you have any comments for the board?
excuse me. I'm actually just going to make a brief comment of thank you. I don't know that I'm going to be at the June 13th meeting. I have a conflict with my child. Well, I have a conflict involving her schedule. Exactly. We scheduled these. And so I wanted to say thank you because next year someone else, Kendall Thu, will be in this position. So I just wanted to say thank you. This has been an exceptional experience this year. I I hope I speak on behalf of all the faculty in thanking you for the work you do for the university. It really is remarkable, and welcome to our new trustees. It will be exciting to see the things going on with you on the board in the future. And I would like to say I will attend some meetings in the future, but I can't guarantee it. So I just wanted to say thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Therese, for not only being the head of the Faculty Senate, but for being a great partner to the board and to everybody at this table. So thank you for your service and your work, and we look forward to working with you in back to your old role. So thank you.
And a segue from that, would also like to thank Therese for her efforts, not only in representing faculty, but also in representing staff through University Council, and her work with the board and just in general has been a great advocate and colleague to work with, and look forward to continuing to having her here as a colleague, but just maybe in a different capacity. Also want to note that SPS look forward to welcoming Provost Ingram. I know that's one of the items for today is kind of making that more official, and just want to say that we look forward to working with her in a shared governance capacity and also in her role in continuing work with HR, especially as it relates to potential conversions from SPS to civil service. Also want to take the opportunity to formally thank Acting Provost McCord for all of his leadership, his commitment to shared governance, his thoughtful leadership and time and passion for NIU and providing stability in uncertain times in the transition process here. Just really thank him for everything that he's done and will continue to do for NIU. Another item up on the agenda today is the board's review and approval of the University Council amendment to the NIU Constitution, Article 6.5. As required by Article 10.3 of the Constitution, that item, after being approved by the University Council, had to go to a faculty referendum. And I noted to University Council, and just wanted to share with this body as well, my intention to bring forward to the University Council in the fall for review consideration of that, the extent to which that referendum, if we do still want to see a referendum take place, should include staff in matters that are not solely related to curriculum. The fact that it does not include staff in items that do have an impact on our day-to-day operations is of concern to me, so I hope that I will be able to successfully bring that forward to University Council and then have that brought forward to this body for final approval. But thank you.
Now I'll just take my turn to echo Cappy. She did this morning. We are also looking forward to welcoming Provost Ingram. I have a growing list of things to talk to her about. I'll give her a few weeks, though. And also, I do thank Provost McCord. It was an honor working with you, and I hope in your new capacity we can continue working together. And I'm also planning to join Kathy. She has agreed on the referendum issue this summer, trying to propose some language about being more inclusive of staff. And Therese, yes, I echo that too. Thank you. You've been a great partner. It's been a great year. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, that takes us to agenda item number six. Where we recognize members of the public who have complied with state law and the Board of Trustees bylaws by registering their written request to address the board. Mr. Brady, have we received any timely requests to address this meeting?
Mr. Chair, we have three requests. First is Kristen Foley. Is she in attendance? All right, so we'll move on to next is Levi Smith.
Hello, members of the Board of Trustees. My name is Levi Smith. I am a geography major with an environmental studies minor here at NIU. I come to you on behalf of the geography and geology students that have been left in the dark about the current situation involving the geography and geology departments. I come to you to address the problem that I cannot be certain has come to your attention or the president's, but it has come to the attention of some students, and that is that the geography and geology departments are merging with very short notice. From the information that few of us have been informed about, the involvement of the environmental studies major is not being considered during this process. Interim Dean Ledgerwood has made these decisions without major discussions between the environmental studies majors, geography, or geology departments. Not only does this inhibit the working relationship between students, faculty, and staff, but it also violates NIU's community core values of transparency, collaboration, participative decision-making, and open communication. The acting dean of the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences has decided to force this merger within the year. Students and staff do not know about this merger, or that do know about this merger, feel like this is too short of a time frame to make such a drastic change to these departments, as they will need to form new bylaws, decide on new curriculum, and decide which faculty to keep. This quick transition has also caused strife between staff of these majors. The interim dean is forcing professors to submit to the merger or be cut without discussion. Staff seems to be prohibited to talk about this with students from fear of termination. And statements berating the students and staff has been made by the interim dean, declaring geography and geology as mamby-pamby sciences. As a student who changed my major from ENVS to geography and will be graduating this Saturday with a bachelor's degree in science in geography, this decision concerns me because the students that are going to be affected by this decision have no voice in the matter. And they have been left in the dark, not knowing that any of these decisions have even been made for them. As a soon-to-be graduate, I see the importance of geography and geology and environmental studies because of the intersectionality of these majors. The geography and geology degrees are epitomal in job sectors like environmental conservation, consultation, or even political environmental science. I implore the board to facilitate communication between the interim dean, geography, geology, and environmental studies, students, and staff. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments and for making us all aware, and also wanted to congratulate you on your graduation.
Thank you.
Next, we have Professor Virginia Nables.
First of all, good afternoon on this lovely spring afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity for allowing me to speak. I'm short, I can't help it. I would also like to welcome our new trustees, and I need to bring to your attention an item that you may not have become aware of, but it is something that I began to address the Board of Trustees about more than 30 years ago. And this is something that I have raised with the Board of Trustees twice previously. And at that time, I promised I would come back and readdress this issue until the problem is corrected. And that problem I am speaking about, I'm sure you're already aware, is the salary inequity for women and minorities that has occurred probably since the inception of the university. You may not be aware, however, that in the late 1970s, there was a settlement. There had evidently been a lawsuit either filed or threatened, and there was a settlement by the university that gave each and every female faculty member who was in the tenure or tenure track position a $3,000 salary increment. And that was because there was a systemic pattern of sex discrimination in salary, something that many of us who are female and also minority are very aware of. And this is actually the dead elephant in the room everybody is ignoring, because this undercuts every effort that all of us can make for job satisfaction and ability for faculty to live their lives and do things that really will help them to feel comfortable and happy and valued in their positions. I will tell you that we hear good things, but actions speak louder than words. And this is a problem that has been addressed by 5 separate faculty salary equity task force reports that started in the late 1990s. I did an additional one myself. Some of you may remember it was above the fold on the front page of the Northern Star. I did a salary analysis for 20 years for all 17 departments of the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences. And because I wanted to make the point, I color-coded the salaries pink and blue. And pink for girls, blue for boys. And it showed unequivocally that assistant professors were kind of mixed. Associate professors, the female salary members, started to gather at the bottom. And for the full professors, not only was there a tremendous loss in numbers of female full professors, but there were a few token female salaries that were higher, but never one at the very top. And that's over 20 years, 17 departments, 3,525 data points, over 400 individuals per year in that analysis. Believe me, it took a lot of time, but I don't have any problem doing the numbers. I have not updated that, but I know that those trends have continued. This is not just an abstract problem. This affects people, individuals, actual living people who have lives that they have to manage. If it was that the faculty are so dedicated to what they do that they would gladly do their job without pay, that would be fine. If also, everyone for whom we needed goods or services said, okay, fine, you're a university faculty member, you don't have to pay for it. Unfortunately, we do. I can't share other people's stories with you, but I do want to remind you that a few meetings ago, one of my colleagues, Dr. Valentiner from psychology, and his wife were discussed by him to this body, saying that his daughter, who is literally the poster child for the music program, is unable to attend NIU as a student because they cannot afford that. Now, that is an issue that is saying their salaries are very poor in comparison to other faculty at Illinois institutions and other faculty across the country. We are not receiving what we need to do our best job. A happy faculty is what is going to help with recruitment, retention, and enrollment for our students. And this is one of the things that I am asking you, please reassess the way monies are distributed so that this issue can be eliminated. The numbers don't lie. I've been told that, oh no, it is just a matter of opinion. It is not a matter of opinion. There are 6 studies that show exactly the same thing. The most recent one was commissioned by the university administration itself, and the person to conduct that study was touted as having excellent credentials, with which I'm sure everybody agrees. The study was accepted, evidently, by the university. It was presented in various formats and venues, and it came up with exactly the same conclusions that all of the previous ones had done. And I would really urge you, please, to reevaluate where you are putting the money, because the happier the faculty, the greater the recruitment tool they can be, and we are the heart of the university. So I want to thank you, and I do want to remind you that this is illegal. This is sex and protected category minority discrimination. I have said this multiple times before. I know our new board members may not be aware of it, but you can access any of the Faculty Salary Equity Task Force reports. I'm sure you can get the full reports, although most of the public only was able to access the executive summaries from most of them. But the most recent one is available online, and anyone who would like to see my salary analysis, I would be delighted to share it with you. So thank you for this time, and please end this illegal discrimination. It's a problem I know from personal fact has gone on for more than 30 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. Okay, agenda item 7. At this time, I would ask Dr. Lisa Freeman to present agenda items 7A through 7D.
Thank you, Chair Barsima. Before introducing item 7A, I just want to echo some congratulations as well. I'd like to congratulate Levi on his graduation and extend that well wish to the 2,800 graduate and undergraduate students who will be receiving their diplomas on Friday night and Saturday. I think that we can all be very, very proud of their accomplishments as they walk across the stage. I'd also like to echo the recognition of Teresa Arado by the board and by her colleagues, Holly and Kathy. Therese, it's been a pleasure to work with you in your role as Faculty Senate President and Exec Secretary of University Council, and I know that we will stay friends and colleagues past your appointment. And then before I talk about the appointment of our next permanent Executive Vice President and Provost, I really also need to say a few words about Dr. McCord, who's acted since the summer of 2017 as our Executive Vice President and Provost. And I can't really say enough about his rigor, his integrity, his compassion, his passion for NIU, and the job that he's done in a role. Dr. McCord transitioned to this role under challenging circumstances and an unexpected transition. He was instructed, as was I, by the board to keep the university moving forward at a time when things were not as stable as they needed to be. He took that to heart. He has worked tirelessly on behalf of our institution, on behalf of our students, on behalf of our employees, on behalf of this board. He's done it with tremendous ethics and integrity. I almost burst out laughing this morning, Chair Barsima, when you said, oh, Chris is going to say, of course I'm right, because Chris would never say anything without so much data to back it up, because he's so careful and considered in his thought processes. And we are all the better for having had him in this role and for having had him as a colleague. So please join me in a round of applause for that.
I would love to echo those words. Dr. McCord, under his college, taught my youngest son, Jason, who graduated from NIU in 2007 with a degree in economics, and has always enjoyed his relationship with Dr. McCord. And I know Chris, as he does with a number of students, went out of his way to make sure that my son and all students were getting the education that they needed, and he was always there to engage in thoughtful discussion. And so, Chris, thank you very much for all that you've done for NIU and in this role, and we look forward to the future with you as well. But thank you for stepping in at a critical time in the history of our university to take on this acting role as our provost, and the exceptional job that you did. So thank you very much.
All right, agenda item 7A, appointment of Executive Vice President and Provost. Following a national search, Dr. Beth Fisher Ingram will join NIU as Executive Vice President and Provost after serving 4 years as the Provost and Vice President for Academic Affairs at North Dakota State University and spending previously 26 years at the University of Iowa, where she began as an assistant professor of economics, rose through the ranks to professor, and then assumed an administrative position as Associate Provost for Undergraduate Education. Dr. Ingram comes to us with a reputation as a collaborative leader and a data-informed problem solver. I'm sure that we will benefit from her experience, from her insights, and as you've heard, many of us look forward to working with her. The recommendation from the university is approval of the request to appoint Dr. Beth Fisher Ingram as the Executive Vice President and Provost with rank of professor with tenure in the Department of Economics, effective May 16th, 2019.
Thank you. May I have a motion to approve agenda item 7A?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Ms. Dewis, would you please take a roll call vote?
Trustee Rita Athus?
Yes.
Trustee John Butler?
Yes.
Trustee Montel Gales?
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes.
Trustee Nathan Hayes?
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero?
Yes.
Trustee Bob Pritchard?
Yes.
Vice Chair Eric Wasowitz?
Yes.
Board Chair Dennis Barsima?
Yes. The motion is approved. Yes.
Again, for the audience, just to explain that this appointment comes with tenure, and by law, the student trustee is prohibited from voting on tenure and promotion, faculty promotion issues, so that's why the roll call vote.
Moving on then to agenda item 7B, Northern Illinois University Facility Naming Policy. This is a policy that has been under development for a number of years. Its presentation to the Board of Trustees was delayed by transitions in a number of key leadership positions, and we're pleased to be able to present it to the Board for consideration today. The document outlines protocol regarding the naming of facilities at NIU. Naming opportunities are important to our efforts to secure major philanthropic gifts for the advancement of the university mission, but also as a way to recognize and honor eminent persons for outstanding service or contributions to the university. To effectively guide these processes, it's necessary to delineate standards to be followed, factors to be considered, and criteria to be employed prior to granting approval for formal naming associated with any university facilities. The sole and final approval for naming of campus facilities is the responsibility of the Board of Trustees of NIU, as stated in the regulations of the board. The policy considered today will be effective May 9th, 2019, the official date upon which it was acted on by NIU Board of Trustees, and the university recommends approval of the NIU facility naming policy.
Great, thank you. May I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion?
I'm just kind of curious as to... So, when I saw this come up, I'm amazed we didn't have this already. So it was kind of surprising to me.
What?
We didn't have this already. It's some sort of a policy on this. So it's something we just haven't gotten to. And
I know I've heard talk of a naming policy for several years, but as Lisa said, I think that with change in leadership and such at various key positions.
So there's no difficulty around this or anything. It's just we didn't get to it.
Honestly, yeah. I think that formal naming policies they come with a university's development operation moving from evolving to be more mature, I guess is what I want to say. And I can remember seeing this policy in development shortly after I came here 10 years ago, but it never really, I think because of transitions, got into a final form for approval. And along the way, as our development operations matured and the thinking on naming policies evolved, there were new aspects added, such as, for example, the ability to recall a name if there was a news report that made it no longer in the university's interest to have a facility named after a particular individual. So I can't speak to exactly why it took so long to get here other than the transitions. I can say I believe we're putting forward a policy that's very thoughtful and that has been vetted over the course of time.
Bob?
Two things. You just mentioned that it's been vetted. Could you elaborate on how this has been reviewed and who's reviewed it?
I cannot actually talk about all of the vetting that's gone on. Catherine Squires, our vice president for advancement, was the lead on this. And I can't speak to the conversations that she's had with the foundation board. Our general counsel's been heavily involved, and I'm going to ask Greg if he wants to talk a little bit about.
Well, Our office has been involved at different stages throughout the years. And so, yes, the foundation, Catherine Squires as vice president for advancement, as well, you know, as her university role, and the vice president for finance and administration, because it deals with facilities. Those three key areas over a span of a few years here have developed this policy out of, there was nothing, there was a board of trustees, to Eric's question earlier, there was a board of trustees regulation that covered the naming of facilities. But as the president had noted, with the maturity of the foundation and looking at other opportunities for naming, and whether that includes not just the facility, but a room or an area or whatnot, the need for such a fleshed out policy came to fruition. And so these three areas, and not exclusive to those three areas, works together with different constituencies and different people with interest to come up with the policy you have before you.
And I would just comment, it does seem to be very thorough and cover a lot of different situations. Regarding the dollar amounts involved in here, is this something that was looked at other institutions of our size or in the conference, or how did we come up with the dollar amounts?
I do believe there was some benchmarking. It wasn't, I wouldn't say formal, but, you know, inquiring at what are other institutions doing, how are they handling this. We wanted that type of information to inform this policy.
Very good. Well, I hope this helps in our fundraising and recognition of people that have been significant in the university's life.
And this also does cover not only the philanthropic naming of buildings, but it also covers the naming of a building relative to a historic or influential figure in NIU's history or in the history of the state or whatever relative to naming buildings. So it covers both philanthropy and the naming due to the significance of the individual.
Is this just for donations moving forward, or is there any, like, over the last 10 years, do we look at this retroactively?
There is some. So for the most part, I would say it's prospective thinking. I would not say that it completely prohibits review retroactively. Mm-hmm. However, you must consider the terms and conditions of donations that were made before this policy was initiated in that assessment. And mm-hmm. so those can get quite complicated. I wouldn't say that it prohibits a retroactive review, but it is definitely intended to move forward prospectively.
If you go to number 7, you know, it says that the policy is effective, assuming it's approved today. It's applicable to all future naming and is superseded by the new policy and is not applicable to any currently named facilities that were negotiated through a gift or naming agreement prior to this date, unless you invoke Section 4C, which basically talks about anybody's name was on a building if they do something egregious in life where they embarrass the university or so forth, then the university has the ability to remove their name.
So is there a simple way to quickly describe this policy? So if it is a facility, it's going to be internally vetted through the process that's described here. There'll be early indicators to the board as to the developing proposal. But then ultimately, does a facility come to the board?
Yes. That's still reserved in the regulations.
Okay. And so that's all preserved. And then, but this outlines sort of an understanding that there's going to be this vetting and all these things are going to take place. And so the board should pretty much be supported by the time it reaches them.
Yes, that was the intent, because the board regulation is quite actually small. It didn't outline a process by which those vettings would happen, and that's a part of the intent of this policy.
And then for internal spaces, is it a different process?
It is.
It essentially delegates the authority.
Correct.
So if a department were to want to name their conference room after some prominent faculty member or something, they would then go through the process here, but that won't go to the board?
Correct.
Okay.
It is pretty detailed. I noticed that there was a graph which talked about the size of the signage that you'll get depending on the amount of the money that is donated. So I think it was on the first page or the second page or something. It's pretty specific.
That's not a legal term. I defer to Catherine on that one.
Okay. Is there any other discussion? Okay, hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Approved. Against, the motion is approved.
Agenda item 7C, University Council amendment to the NIU Constitution, Article 6.5. At the April 3rd, 2019 meeting, University Council approved a proposed constitutional amendment that's outlined in this item, eliminating references to president's staff in the university constitution. The proposed amendment was approved by a 159-49 majority of those voting. In a faculty referendum that was obligatory in following the University Council vote. The constitutional change now must be approved by the Board of Trustees pursuant to Article 10 of NIU's Constitution. The recommendation from the University is pursuant to Article 10 of the University Constitution. The University requests Board of Trustees approval of the University Council amendment to remove Article 6.5 and sub-Article 5.1 and 6.5.2 from the NIU Constitution.
Okay. May I have a motion to approve item 7C?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? John?
I have a question. Just how was the faculty referendum conducted?
It was done by a Qualtrics poll administered by Patricia Erickson.
So that would have meant, I'm sorry, I'm not entirely familiar with that platform, so that would have meant that an email would have gone out to all the faculty members, and they would have had then some sort of link?
Yes.
Okay.
Other questions? When was the last time we changed the Constitution? Did anybody know?
Yeah, I don't remember the exact date, but it wasn't too long ago with the initiative that Greg Long, and I don't know, maybe Therese may know, but I know Greg Long put forward some changes because that was the start of the Policy Library Initiative.
That was a change in the bylaws.
Was that?
I don't think it was a constitutional change.
Well, okay.
I don't recall ever a constitutional change that I can recall.
No.
And I'm the three-eyed raven.
You would know
me.
Okay. Other discussion? Okay. Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is approved.
Great. Moving on to the last agenda item on the President's Report, agenda item 7D, we just heard referred to with reference to our previous couple Faculty Senate presidents ago, Greg Long, who was an advocate for trying to create a transparent repository of university policies and better processes for getting feedback on those policies and a formalized process for updating and archiving the policies. This initiative, the Policy Library, was started in 2016. It came out of shared governance, out of the University Council, Faculty Senate's Rules, Governance, and Elections Committee. A series of presentations and updates were made to the Faculty Senate and University Council. There was significant amount of work done looking at policy libraries at other institutions to show how they worked and how they might benefit us. A letter to the President in 2017 from Shared Governance and the RG leadership proposed the creation of a policy library and requested funding for a policy librarian position. This was very notable because it's very unusual for our faculty and staff, but our faculty in particular, to request creation of a new administrative position. That spoke to how important this was to our university as an initiative. We approved the proposal. Dr. Rebecca Becky Hunt was hired in the spring of 2018 to begin duties as a university policy librarian. In August of 2018, she's been collecting policies from various university divisions, and the policy library was launched April 9th. Dr. Hunt is here to give us an update on the policy library. Becky, thank you for sticking with us today to give this presentation. And just as a point of information, I'll say the policy library resides in the relatively new Office of Ethics and Compliance.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you, President Freeman. Okay, some of the information Dr. Freeman had already covered, I'm going to cover again. I'm going to start by going back to the background of the policy library. Okay, the policy library initiative began in 2016 with the Rules, Governance, and Elections Committee, and I served on that committee for 2 years working on the initiative. And with regular presentations to the faculty and to the University Council, we outlined how a policy library would help provide a centralized place for all university-wide policies to enhance consistency and transparency. Once the initiative was complete, a letter to the president was sent from Shared Governance and the RGE leadership proposing that we have a creation of the policy library and funding for a policy librarian. In the spring of 2018, the position for policy librarian was posted, and I submitted my application, and subsequently I was appointed to the position, and I started in August of 2018. The university-wide policies were collected in the fall of 2018 and the spring of 2019. So I've been collecting policies over 8 months. The policy was launched April 9th, and up on the screen is a link to the website. And you can see that on your computers or your mobile devices. So with the policy library, we had to define what university policy library, what university-wide policies were. And so we came up with that all university-wide policies were statements of principles. They are associated with the conduct required of NIU's employees and students, was consistent with the university's purpose and mission, and that all employees and students must follow the policies. Now, there are some policies that are on campus that is germane to individual departments or colleges. Those policies do not reside in the policy library because it doesn't affect the entire campus community. I have some examples of some university policies. There's the alcohol beverage policy, disability resource center policy, the clean desk policy, and the non-discrimination, harassment, and retaliation policy and procedures for students, faculty, and staff. As a part of the policy library, the policy on managing university policies was drafted, and it's the primary document that formalizes the university policy making procedures. It was drafted in collaboration with shared governance and university stakeholders. It's intended to provide structure, consistency, and transparency to the policymaking process. It establishes the process for developing, reviewing, approving, and maintaining all university-wide policies. There is one exception, however. The NIU Constitution and bylaws are exempt from this policy. The Constitution and bylaws will follow established shared governance procedures, the current ones that are in place. And because the policy on managing policies is an administrative policy, the president is the approval authority for it. So along with the policy library, there are key people that keep the policy library current, and that would be the policy librarian and the policy library committee. The policy librarian maintains and publishes and notifies the university community of all approved and revised university policies. I establish and review a review cycle for the policies, and I work closely with university archives for proper archiving of policies. The Policy Library Committee is comprised of university representatives who meet on a monthly basis. They're responsible for reviewing university policy proposals and revisions. They recommend, approve, revise, rescission, and rewriting of new and existing policies. The Policy Library Committee considers whether a policy is necessary and consistent with the mission of the university. It recommends the appropriate policy approval authority for final approval of a policy proposal or revision. Finally, it identifies as needed content experts or other resources needed for policy development, approval, and/or review. The Policy Library Committee is made up of the Executive Vice President and Provost, the Vice President of Administration and Finance, Senior Associate Vice President for Human Resources, Executive Secretary of University Council, Chair of the University Council Rules, Governance, and Elections Committee, President of Operating Staff Council, President of Supportive Professional Staff Council, President of the Student Association, and we have general counsel as advisory. Policy procedures. If we could go back to the policy library, is that possible? Could you click on submit or revise a policy?
Top bar.
Then click on process. This is a flow chart of what I'm going to explain to you. It's kind of easier to follow the flow chart while I speak. I have slides, but I think that this gives a better view of the process. Policy proposals are developed by a sponsor, and the sponsor submits the policy proposal or revision using the online policy template, which is part of the website. The policy librarian makes sure that it's complete. And then the policy librarian will submit the policy proposal or revisions to the policy library committee. The policy library committee will approve the policy proposal and revisions and send to the policy approval authority, which could be either the president, university council, or the board of trustees. Once vetted, the policy librarian will place the policy proposal or revision on the policy library website for 30 days for review and public comment from the university committee. community, excuse me. Finally, after the 30 days have gone by, all comments will be reviewed by the sponsor and the policy librarian, and if needed, changes to policy proposal and revisions will be made. The final policy proposal or revision is returned to the policy library committee with relevant changes, if any. If there's no further consultation needed, the proposal or the revision is sent to the policy approval authority for final approval. After final approval, the policy librarian will publish the final approved policy and revisions to the policy library website. The procedure continues for each new policy, proposal, or revisions, and all policies will be placed on a 3-year review cycle to keep the policy library current. And is there any questions?
Can you give us some idea how big is the database of policies?
The last time that I checked, there were 291 policies.
And you said that everyone's going to get reviewed every 3 years?
Yes, we're working on putting each of the policies on a 3-year cycle. Yes. Some are automatically reviewed yearly, so they'll go through their yearly review, but for the most part every 3 years.
And I would assume that you're in the process right now of kind of vetting them all to understand what ones are current, what ones aren't current and either need to go or need to be revised, right?
Yes. We have policies that are as old as 1992.
Yeah.
Is this a relational kind of database where do I have to know the exact policy name or can I just plug in keyword of some sort?
When you go to the policy library website, there's a keyword search, so you have that, or you can look it up through the A to Z index. You can find it that way. Find a policy, keyword search A to Z. Put in. Pardon. Clean desk policy.
No. other questions?
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's awesome to see this. I know this is something we've talked about for a long time, and it's. Not only great to see us have the policy library, but it's great to see it be under yourself, Sarah, and to have it concentrated into your department. So congratulations and thank you, Bob.
Quick follow-up. Do we have a policy police? Who determines if the policies have been violated?
It depends on the policy. There are, but usually, typically, if there's a complaint that a particular individual has violated a policy, then there's myriad ways to report that. If it's a certain policy that the Ethics and Compliance Office has to investigate and handle, that's one avenue. Direct supervisors can always handle complaints about not following policy by their supervisees. HR can intake complaints of that and move through the system. So there's a myriad number of ways that these are enforced and looked over. So.
Okay, thank you.
And Bob, there's a dozen
Board of Trustees policies that are just looking at them there. So,
you good? Great. Okay, Lisa, thank you very much. We will move on to agenda item 8, the chair's report, which is Jackson versus the Board of Trustees of Northern Illinois University. and I will read this action item. On October 2nd, 2015, Keith Jackson brought a lawsuit against the Board of Trustees of Northern Illinois University. Former President Doug Baker and former interim Chief Financial Officer Nancy Suttonfield in federal district court related to his separation from employment with NIU. In addition, Mr. Jackson filed a separate claim against the Board of Trustees with the Illinois Court of Claims. The parties participated in a settlement conference held by the Federal District Court on April 17th, 2019. As a result of that settlement conference, the university and Mr. Jackson have reached a proposed agreement to forever resolve the issues presented in the cases and end the litigation between the parties. The settlement of these matters in no way constitutes an admission of wrongdoing on the part of the university, its employees, or Mr. Jackson. Under the proposed agreement, Mr. Jackson will receive a total of $600,000, which will be paid out by the university's insurance carrier. After all qualifying expenses related to the litigation are applied to the applicable insurance deductible limits. In return, Mr. Jackson agrees that all claims brought against the university and the individually named defendants will be dismissed. In addition, the university will provide Mr. Jackson with a letter of reference noting positions held, the length of time served at NIU, and the integrity with which Mr. Jackson served, and Mr. Jackson will agree not to disparage the university and its employees. The settlement was entered into with the approval of the university's insurer and with concurrence from the Office of the Illinois Attorney General. Considerations weighing in favor of a settlement include, but are not limited to, the financial cost of a trial and associated hearings in both matters, the inconvenience to the university's employees, who were also defendants or potential participants in the cases, and the disruption of university operations for university employees to participate in the cases moving forward. The Board of Trustees is being asked to authorize the terms of the proposed settlement and associated payments as described here and in the board item to fully and finally resolve all claims brought by or on behalf of Keith Jackson in the United States District Court for the Northern District of Illinois and the Illinois Court of Claims. If approved, the board approval will also include authorization for the Office of the Illinois Attorney General to reduce the terms of the proposed settlement into a written agreement for the parties of the litigation to sign and execute. May I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion is approved.
I would like to, for the record, to state that I am abstaining from this vote.
Should we do a roll call?
Yes.
You heard the call from the
mayor. Okay, why don't we do a roll call, Ms. Dewis, if you could please do a roll call vote.
Trustee Rita Athus. Trustee John Butler.
Yes.
Trustee Montel Gales.
Stay.
Trustee Nathan Hayes.
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero.
Yes.
Trustee Bob Pritchard.
Yes.
Vice Chair Eric Wasowitz.
Yes.
Board Chair Dennis Barsima.
Yes. Thank you. The motion is approved. Agenda item number 9, other matters. Are there any other matters requiring the attention of the committee today? John.
I must admit that I was wrong. Since I have been on the board, we have approved four changes to the Constitution, the board regulations. In 2012, we added gender identity and expression, remember that. 2015, two things. In December of that year, changes to our language regarding FOIA and related to the PhD in health sciences, and then the reapportionment change in 2016 for the university council membership.
So that makes me doubt the fire engine story.
It should. It should. It should.
Well, thank you for clarifying that. I appreciate that. Are there any other matters that require the attention of the committee?
That's for the new trustees. I mean, this just never happens. I mean, for John to be wrong on anything is pretty amazing. But I would also like to say, though, speaking of people that are never wrong on things, but Chris, I've worked with you closely over the last couple of years here, and especially since you've been in the acting provost position. So thank you very much for your help, and I think you'll do great things. So there's a lot of good opportunity out there, as we've talked about.
Anything else? Okay. The next meeting date of the full Board of Trustees is June 13th at 9 a.m. Agenda item 11, closed session. The board needs to go into closed session. We do not plan to take up any new business following the closed session. May I have a motion to close the public meeting to conduct a closed session to discuss the following subjects authorized by the Illinois Open Meetings Act. Personnel matters as described under sections 2C, 1, 2, and 3, and 21 of the Open Meetings Act. Collective bargaining matters as described under section 2C2 of the Open Meetings Act. Student disciplinary cases as described under section 2C9 of the Open Meetings Act. Litigation and risk management matters as described under sections 2C11 and 12 of the Open Meetings Act. And closed session minutes matters as described under section 2C21 of the Open Meetings Act.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Ms. Dewis, would you please take a roll call vote to close the meeting?
Trustee Rita Athus. Trustee John Butler.
Yes.
Trustee Montel Gales.
Yes.
Trustee Nathan Hayes.
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero.
Yes.
Trustee Bob Pritchard. Vice Chair Eric Wasowitz.
Yes.
Board Chair Dennis Barsima.
Yes. The motion is approved. The public meeting is now closed. We have returned from closed session, and we need to do a roll call. It is 6:53 on Thursday, May 9th, and we need to do a roll call, so... Yeah, I can do the roll call. So this is Dennis Barsima doing the roll call. Trustee Gales.
Here.
Trustee Hayes.
Here.
Trustee Butler.
Here.
Trustee Herrero.
Here.
Trustee Wasowitz.
Here.
Trustee Barsima. Here. Trustee Pritchard. Trustee Athus. I think that's it, right?
Yep.
Okay. Okay, may I have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Aye. The motion is approved and the meeting is now adjourned.